And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is the budget deficit ceiling negotiations. Each of my guests is giving us a unique perspective on the negotiations happening in Washington and its possible impact on the future. My next guest is an advocate with HaltTheAssault.com, a group that believes there's too much government regulation in the free market. He's concerned that the budget deficit ceiling increase negotiations may bring about the form of higher taxes and or increased regulation. We'll discuss his recent testimony before the National Labor Relations Board. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Brett McMahon is Vice President of Miller and Long Concrete Construction, a non-union contractor, and as I said, he's an advocate with HaltTheAssault.com. He and other business leaders have been crippled by the regulations resulting from President Obama's economic stimulation. Brent has just recently testified before the National Relations Labor Board and wrote an op-ed piece for FoxNews.com. Joining us from the greater Washington, D.C. area. Welcome to the show, Brett. How are you today?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you for being our guest and being a spokesperson for the construction industry, because no industry has been harder hit by the Great Recession than construction. 27% unemployment within that. And I found it interesting in doing the research for this interview, 85% of construction workers are non-union. That surprised me a little bit, Brett, to be honest with you. And I think that you'd agree, though, to this statement, that there is going to be no economic recovery without a recovery in construction. So give us an idea of how the $700 billion that we as Americans just spent on stimulus is helping put construction workers back to work.
Well, unfortunately, the majority of that stimulus money did not go to construction. It went, really was allowed to be shifted on state and city books towards essentially making their fiscal year ends look good. I believe about 5% of the total of the stimulus package actually went towards real construction. And what was also the case there is that majority of the construction was simply sped up. It wasn't necessarily new work. Some of it was maybe in road resurfacing or something like that, but it was really an acceleration of things that were already in the pipeline. So as far as net new jobs, it had very little impact, as is evidenced by our unemployment rate.
Well, Brett, let me stop you right there. What about all of these shovel-ready projects that we were told that exist and that we were ready and we were going to invest part of that $700 billion into? I'm dismayed to hear that it was only 5% of that $700 billion went into any kind of construction project, and many of those construction projects were pre-existing. Talk to me about shovel-ready projects. Where are they?
Well, there really is no such thing, as the president unfortunately, after the fact, seems to have come to that realization. I mean, construction projects, especially government projects that are infrastructure-related, take years of planning, and you just don't say, okay, flip a switch, let's go do this. Unless you've got a project that has met all its approvals, the drawings are all done, and you can bid it within a few, you know, a month or two, that might qualify as shovel-ready, but there such a thing just doesn't exist. It's much more of a science than people, I guess, some of the administration who've never done any construction in their lives might think. You don't just snap your fingers and decide, hey, we're going to build a new water plant right here. It just doesn't work that way.
All right. Well, conversely, our $700 billion did buy us a lot more regulation when it comes to the construction field and regulation that's impacting you and your company. One recent example of this officious overregulation, federal agencies are now required to use union contractors on projects that exceed $25 million. Negative impacts on non-union subcontractors are going to result in this. So in what ways will that decision that we have to use union contractors on these $25 million projects impact small business, taxpayers, our job, our unemployment rate? How is this going to impact us, Brett?
Well, in a number of ways. I mean, you cited the figures above, you know, 85% of construction workers are non-union, and which means their companies are non-union signatories. So by requiring union construction on federal projects, the administration has effectively barred almost 9 out of 10 construction workers because it's almost impossible. It's sort of like saying you can own a handgun in New York City, but it's a virtual impossibility to actually go through the maze of regulatory stuff to actually, you know, purchase one. They make it so hard for you to do. So it's theoretically possible that a non-union firm could bid one of these projects, but they are lacking the information required. If you're not a signatory, you don't know the wage rates or the work rules for the union, so it's almost impossible for you to even put together a reasonable guess as to what your labor costs are for a bidding a project. Plus, it requires you to double pay for benefits and other things, which make it, you know, may put you at a cost disadvantage even if you do get to the point of being able to calculate your labor. It really essentially creates a monopoly for construction trades unions to perform all this taxpayer-funded work, even though, you know, other taxpayers, their fellow taxpayers, have decided not to join the union. Those folks are pretty much barred.
Well, monopoly is a nasty word no matter how you cut it, particularly to Americans. But I want to come back, Brett, to this regulation. Now, it says in the regulation somewhere in the verbiage there that it's not an absolute requirement that
right.
you use the union contractors. So doesn't that give you some wiggle room there?
Well, it's sort of like in theory, yes, but it's a practical impossibility because as you put together a construction bid, you have, in sort of my sector of the industry, kind of heavy construction, your costs are basically half of your cost are materials and half of your cost is labor. And to be a union signatory means that you know that the carpenters require 4 carpenters to perform this kind of task and 6 to do this and 8 to do that and what their wage rates are and what their benefit packages are and things like that, as opposed to that knowledge that you'd have from your regular workforce. If you don't already have all that information, it's literally a virtual impossibility for you to actually go ahead and put together a bid that wouldn't just be literally throwing a dart at the wall and trying to come up with some kind of guess. And nobody's going to guess at $25 million worth of work unless you're trying to go out of business. So that's why it creates this practical impossibility.
All right.
It's theoretically possible, but not practical.
All right. My guest is Brett McMahon. He's the vice president of Miller and Long Concrete Construction. He's also an advocate for HaltTheAssault.com. So let's bring it down to the level of your business, if we can, Brett, at Miller and Long Concrete Construction. So these projects that are available, they're going to be doled out to union contractors. You are a non-union shop. How does that impact you?
Well, it takes one of the last pieces off the table. I mean, so much of the rest of the commercial construction market all over the United States, I mean, frankly, we are very lucky here in the Washington, D.C. metro area that we are actually doing better than almost everywhere else, but it's still an enormous drop in terms of revenues and construction demand here. So without any commercial construction to actually make up that difference, the only thing remaining is government work. If government work is taken off the table, then you're pretty much left wanting for anything.
All right. Now walk me through this, because I'm a taxpayer, as you are, and as taxpayers, that means that the number of people bidding on a major construction project is limited, and therefore you have a smaller pool of players. As you said, it creates a virtual monopoly. What does that mean in terms of the cost of running a project, $25 million or more project? What does that mean to us as taxpayers?
But just like in anything, when you decrease competition, you raise prices. It allows those remaining few that are eligible or desirous of going after this work to essentially raise their prices. We've seen cases where it's virtually eliminated what would be a 16 or 17 bidders on a job down to 1 or 2. And if they know that, because everybody's going to know how many bidders there are, they know that their prices can escalate accordingly. Plus, it's not really a question of wages so much anymore in terms of pricing. It's really work rules. It's these kind of old-fashioned, archaic things that exist in labor unions that sort of what I mentioned before. They dictate to you how many people have to do this task and that task and exactly what those tasks are, whether they can carry tools, whether they can touch this piece of equipment or that piece of equipment. It's really, it's very, very much something almost from the 19th century, not even the 20th century. And so, you know, you end up in these situations where the costs just begin to balloon relative to what, you know, the free market would dictate that you could actually construct the building for a given price.
All right, Brett. Well, let me take the other side of this argument, if I can, then. I agree with you that union regulations, these work regulations, might require four carpenters instead of two to do a job, and that means higher cost to us as taxpayers. But for our higher taxpayer dollars, we're actually getting double the employment. So isn't that really helping us on the unemployment front by hiring more, in this particular case, union carpenters?
Well, that's sort of that good old-fashioned Bastiat broken window theory, you know, where it makes sense somehow. Some people would argue that, hey, if you break all the windows in a town, then that puts gives work to the guy installing the glass. Well, it also takes money out of the hands of the person whose windows you broke, who has to now pay for those things. It is this kind of concept of you know, expanding employment through executive fiat never really works because it's taking money out of everybody else's hands that could also be put productively to use through something that they choose, which is the way our capitalist system is supposed to work.
All right. My guest is Brett McMahon. He's vice president of Miller and Long Concrete Construction in the greater Washington, D.C. area. So you recently testified in front of the National Labor Relations Board. What was the substance of your testimony before the NLRB?
Well, I was testifying in opposition to a forthcoming rule from the National Labor Relations Board that would accelerate the time frame between when a union presents a group of signature cards that they claim when they present those, there's a time frame that kicks in into which there should be a secret ballot election as to whether or not the employees actually want the union or not. Right now, that time frame is about 38 days, and the National Labor Relations Board wants to cut that time frame down to 7 to 10 days. And basically, what I was trying to convey to them is that it is grossly disrespectful to the workers there to not give them the opportunity to hear from both sides of the equation. Joining a union is a very consequential thing. It frankly more important than any electoral decision that you'll make. It's more long lasting. It may affect the remainder of your working days, and it's really only fair to those employees that they get to hear the employer's side, which that speech, by the way, that the employer is allowed to make is very highly regulated. They're not allowed to lie or threaten or you know, issue promises and all those kinds of things.
Brett, does that imply that the union leaders can lie and threaten?
Yeah, there have actually been a number of NLRB cases that actually completely validate the union's ability to lie during an organizing campaign. And one of the most amazing ones, NLRB decision, says that really, you know, employees are not naive enough to believe all the promises union organizers make. Therefore, they're allowed to promise anything they want. I mean, truly, that's an actual decision by this kangaroo court known as the NLRB. It really is outrageous to say such a thing. I mean, especially given the converse that that they highly regulate the speech by the employer. And when the employer doesn't even have the opportunity to speak during that, you know, if they cut it down to 7 to 10 days, it's completely skewing the what this body is supposed to be doing, which is sort of regulate the relations between employers and employees, not simply putting a full fist on the scale in favor of organized labor.
My guest is Brett McMahon. And Brett, it brings up an interesting point. How were you selected to testify before the NLRB? I mean, you know, there must be hundreds of other contractors around the country that, just like yourself. Why were you selected?
Well, you know, I don't know.
Fair enough.
You know, a lot of people, I'm sure, requested. This was something of a unique experience for the NLRB. They don't have a lot of open testimony situations, and when I heard about it, I put my name in and I said, why not? You know, you just can't allow this kind of thing to go on unchallenged and not at least, you know, try and stick up for your point of view. It these bureaucracies tend to get more and more arrogant with time, especially when they're not pushed back against. And it really needs, you know, it needs to be done. Everybody has, you know, should do it. It's your, sort of your duty as a citizen.
All right. Well, now you've piqued my interest with this, Brett. So give me an idea of what it's like to testify before a federal committee.
Well, it's you know, it's not that big a deal, really. It's there are four or five people. They sit in a room that sort of looks like a judicial setup, and you know, sit there for a long, long time as they call you up. You know, it's just as long as you're speaking what you believe, and then you know your subject. Well, there shouldn't be any reason to be intimidated about it. I mean, they are essentially public servants. They're supposed to be, and frankly, I've always viewed public servants as they should be willing to hear from the public, whether they like what they're hearing or not.
All right. Well, now that makes sense. Now, did you have a prepared statement, or was it completely ad lib? Did they ask you follow-on questions? How did that work?
Yes, I had a prepared statement. I'd written it out for myself, and then they did ask some follow-on questions because I ran on just a bit. Never quite figured out how to testify in 5 minutes, but so I tried to give them, you know, my point of view and point of view of a number of employers that I was, you know, sort of de facto representing there, you know, so, yeah, I got some follow-ups and, you know, answered them to the best of my ability.
I'll be darned. My guest is Brett McMahon. He's vice president of Miller and Long Concrete Construction. He's also an advocate for HaltTheAssault.com. Brett, if people are interested in what you have to say, they want to learn more about this, they want to learn more about the growing amount of regulation that's happening right now, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, the website that we help with is called HaltTheAssault.com. It's HaltTheAssault.com, kind of all spelled out as one word. And then we have a Facebook page, so it's HaltTheAssault, found via Facebook. And we try and get a lot of people's opinions there from small businesses of every sector, not just construction, but you know, dry cleaners, jewelers, doesn't matter what, software people, doesn't matter. Everybody is getting picked on these days, and we're trying to kind of figure out a way to consolidate those voices so we can push back and tell them to just please just leave us alone. We'll get back to doing what we do best.
All right. The site is HaltTheAssault.com. Brett, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.